board. And then you write it and upload that to the computer.
Work.
You can click on wherever you're writing and it'll play that. If I'm writing that, I can click on it and whatever you're saying. I think that my dad got it. I just make the, well, that was your like micro graphics, so like the bottom you can. Yeah,
Don't insult it.
I take offense. I came because you're teaching me this time.
I'm here to confuse you some more. All right, let's make the choice. There's lots of ways you can do this. It's flexible. I'll do whatever you like. We can answer this question. Go back to your notes. I didn't get this part about the six pin nerve, seven pin nerve, how to pull the fifth and brace up. Who cares about that? Why should I know that? Put it that way. I'll just answer questions. Go to the slide that you want. Option number two, I guess, would be, that'd be random special. So we can round the questions come home. We can go back to the slides we've already seen before. Right? And just say, which about this one? Click through and stop. It goes, yeah, get this one here. Can you go over to the case again? Option number two. Option number three is none of that stuff. Just the cases. Old cases and new cases. So you learn perhaps new facts, but you try to figure out how to apply the facts. Would you like to do that? We'll do some version of all three, right? Because nobody's going to, I think, ask. How about we start with random questions? I've all got slides we can put up. We can put up your slide of choice. That helps illustrate it. Or I just talk, draw on the board a bit. I can do better with A and B, 3 prime and 5 prime. So all this is very clear. There aren't any questions about nerd atom. That's really good. What does the nucleus ambiguous do? I'll ask you a question. We've not talked about the nucleus ambiguous. It's coming on Monday. But what does the nucleus ambiguous do? Anybody has read the book? So I'll check your two cents. Yeah. It's the motor nerves of the vagus. There are two motor nerves in the vagus, which I mentioned on Wednesday, right? I didn't tell you what the other one was. What's the other motor nerve of the vagus? Got a handy name. It's the dorsal motor nucleus. Easy to remember. Must be on the dorsal part of the midbrain. I mean, of the brainstem, not in the midbrain. All right. Other questions? Random questions. The faster, the better. Rapid fire questions are more fun than slow fire questions.
The
MLF. The
MLF. You mean eye movements or just the MLF?
MLF
Find the MLF. How can you find the MLF on a practicum? There it is. Just here. You find it's on the dorsal surface. Surface exactly. The dorsal part, just underneath the fourth ventral. The fourth ventral is easy to find. It's the big fluid filled space in the midbrain and pons. You can't miss it. So right underneath it is the MLF. It goes all the way down into the spinal cord. It's a really, really long structure. Right. There it is again. We're heading up this time. Okay. All the way to the bottom of the midbrain to the top of the spinal cord, the MLF. Why does it go such a long distance? It's controlling the eye movements. And we're going to talk much about this. The head and neck movements, too. The eye movements we're going to focus on, that is perhaps, that is certainly complicated enough. Let's be MLF though. At the very top, it does not change its position. It does not do like the neonicis does and go all over the place. Stays put. Makes it easy to identify anatomically. It makes it easy to ask about on a practical. PAG separates finally from the aqueduct. By the same. Fast forward. Do you know that? Speak to Scott. This slide. The things you need to know about. We're going to kind of ignore the PPRF. You may know what PPR stands for. Not hugely important. Do you remember what it is? PPRS is good. What are the parameters are important? 3 and 6. Number 4, as you notice, is here. It's not attached to anything. So number 4 does not count in the MLF. The MLF does not control number 4, just 3 and 6. So this system, the point of this is to control your lateral gaze to yoke. That's the fancy word yoke. Like the yoke of oxen together, so they do things in tandem. Same time, simultaneously, you yoke your items together laterally. That's the point of the NLF. That's why it exists. It's connected to the third nerve. It is not the third nerve nucleus, right? It's connected to it. That's what this is trying to show. Connected to the sixth nerve on both sides. We've got an NLF, as you saw, bilaterally. They're right close together, like my two fingers, as they run through the brainstem. It's hard to image to take out one of them and leave the other one okay, but you can do that, especially in multiple sclerosis. It's a pathognomonic way to diagnose MS, where almost nothing else causes such a minute, careful, circumscribed, itty-bitty lesion that knocks out one half of the MLF and gives you some really weird eye findings. I have movies to show where you can do that. It does not. Here's the fourth. Is it attached to anything? Are there errors that go through in this pedal? The answer is no. So it does not attach it. The fourth nerve, is that involved in lateral gaze? No. You would not expect it to be in part of the left, and it is not. Independent system. It's controlled by the cortex. FES stands for frontal eye field. Frontal eye field. This is the voluntary part of this pathway. And you say, I would like to look to my left right now. You look to your left. That signal comes from the cortex. The cortex is voluntary. Things I want to do. And notice where the input is. The input goes all the way down to the parapontine particular formation. Parapontine or paramedian pontine reticular formation, depending on who you believe. It's in the pons, a part of the reticular formation. Six nerves in the pons, right? Remember that? Six in the pons. So a nuclear group, kind of large, like it shows here, is right next to it. And that's how this six nerve connects to the cortex. So the starting point for this pathway is the cortex, and the next part is the PPRF, which controls, obviously, the six nerve. And then via the MLF, controls the third nerve on the other side. So decision, I want to look to my left, will activate. Which hemisphere is going to make you look to your left? Let me figure this out. I can ask it that way. A patient has a stroke. Look at this one. A patient has a stroke, wipes out the cortex. That's a seizure. Has a seizure in the cortex. It's firing too much. Overexcite this pathway right here. It's the person's right hemisphere. The right hemisphere. It's firing too much. Which way will the eyes deviate? Firing too much, this fires too much. This takes the opposite eye, the contralateral eye, the left eye, and it fires. The sixth nerve activates the lateral rectus muscle. The lateral rectus contracts. Which way does the left eye move? Left. The left eye goes out. Abduction. AB is abduction. Adduxia. It also activates the third nerve, follow the pathway, the third nerve, and the right eye, the medial rectus contracts, so the right eye goes inward. So both eyes go this way. If you have a stroke, it's exactly the reverse. You decrease the amount of activity, the tonic activity in these pathways. And the eyes now shift to the patient's right. So if the patient is laying on the side in the gurney in the ER and is looking to the right, I can't speak to you, you know he's had a stroke. You know what hemisphere it's in.
The child that had that we see with hydrocephalus, is this what causes vertigo?
Hydrocephalus, there's a
sun down.
There's another anatomical pathway, which I have not planned to talk about, but since you asked, right here. Anatomically, it's right here, just on top of the third nerve. So this guy is really close together. But right here, just anterior to the third nerve nucleus, is something called the rostral interstitial nucleus of Cajal. You need not know that. You need not know that. But it's a nuclear group whose job it is, when it fires, it causes the superior rectus muscle to fire. Superior rectus. Like I'm making the eyes go up or down. Goes up. Okay. If you take hydrocephalus, and hydrocephalus is going to affect the RI, the Russian interstitial nucleus of Cajal, the RIMLF, called the up gaze center, it's going to impair that. So the eyes lose the ability to look up. So which way do the eyes look? Now, well, you can diagnose hydrocephalus in a child or an adult. Because they had down gaze, they can't look up. Say, look up here, they say, I can't. So they've got increased intracranial pressure affecting the top of the midbrain, impairing that nuclear group I just mentioned. You already made a diagnosis. Is it one eye or both eyes? Is there ever a need in the body to look one eye up and one eye not up? No. And so these are yoked together. When you look up, there's one nucleus, it raises both eyes. Frontal cortex, motor cortex, part that does drives the eye. You can get really fancy and make different lesions, just wipe out right here. Or just wipe out this part and see what happens. And it's a good thing to do for a test, is just take a knife or an eraser, a line, draw a thing through here, and see what happens to the eye movements. And you get some really weird eye movements. It's called 1.5 syndrome. Get bored, look up 1.5 syndrome. 1.5. It's a really cool syndrome. I've got maybe somewhere a 1.5 syndrome. If you understand 1.5 syndrome, you got this down. It's not any more complicated. It's just a very highly specific lesion, a little tiny lesion, especially in the multiple sclerosis. Okay, I said MLF. Other questions? The opposite symptoms, right? Stroke is going to be an eye movement, so there's opposite symptoms. Is that clear why? It's not. Raise your hand.
What was the question?
How do strokes and seizures affect gaze? Do they affect the same? Right? No, they affect them opposite. Do you want to, the clinical mnemonic, not mnemonic, clinical phrase is people look away from their seizure and toward their stroke. Look away from your seizure and toward your stroke. I like knowing the pathways and I can figure out what it is. Because I could not figure out 1.5 syndrome by knowing that little phrase. By the anatomy, I can do anything that goes wrong.
So if you were to lose both your MLS, with the exception of the intorsion, your vision would be fine, you just wouldn't be able to rotate the eye, move the eyeballs, and you just have to use your neck to see anything?
Would you call it a Wabino? Wall-eyed bilateral contributor ophthalmal plegia, which you just described.
That's a pretty big word.
Wabino. If you can say that better. So his question is, what if you wiped out the MLF up here? You had what's called top of the basilar syndrome. You have a stroke of your basilar artery, and you kill this part. You kill both third nerves and the MLF. Which way do the eyes look?
They don't.
Straight.
Do
it look straight? Nope, not straight. Why not part of it straight? And just you know, take this and figure it out, right? Go through this exercise. That's why you don't have to memorize it. You just can figure it out by drawing this little diagram. Yes. Both eyes look out. A walleye, you know what a walleye pike looks like? No, that's not. Okay. Their eyes are not like this. A walleye pike is not looking at their paraplegia.
In which case was that? When they look out?
No, if you...
When you wipe this part right here.
Okay.
They have a stroke from the top of the basilar artery, like that. There's another nucleus, not to confuse you, but somebody asked me to have a test. But tell you, there's the vestibular nucleus. Remember the vestibular nucleus? It's right up here, and they attach to the ipsilateral PPRF. Vestibular nucleus group. Does the vestibular group have anything to do with eye movements? Anybody ever been on a merry-go-round? One person. I'm having a proud shopper. The rest of you. The pride is. The vestibular nucleus controls this. You might want to think, try to figure out how the vestibular nucleus can employ affect eye movements if you have a lesion that wipes out one vestibular nucleus. That's in Meniere's disease. You get a more common viral infection, wipe out the vestibular nucleus. How's that going to affect eye gaze? Other questions? We're not going to ask about the rostral interstitial nucleus of the Hawley nucleus. Just for fun. Right? Look, it's a case. So what could it be? Just trying to explain. By you see a patient who looks like this. They look straight ahead. You ask them to look to their left or to their right. They do this. You ask them to look to their left and they do this. And how could you explain it? Well, there's the answer. I hate to give away the answer. Take a spot, take a lesion, put it here, put it right here, put it anywhere, and see if you can make the eye movements. And patients do this. This is not made up. This is real life. We do a case? Let's do a case. I like cases. They're more fun than lectures. What you think? Okay. Get out of your way so you can see this. Well, I can see it. Read it too. A 52-year-old lady. Got Crohn's disease. What is Crohn's disease? Do you know what Crohn's is? It's a pretty common disorder. That's right. It's inflammation in the colon. Small bowel, very end of it. Anyway, but it's an inflammatory disorder. It's like multiple sclerosis in that it is an autoimmune disease. The body's own immune system attacks the gut, in this case, the colon. Crohn's disease. So something is wrong. She's got an anti. Her body's attacking her system. That's a risk factor, right? All kinds of stuff. Besides bowel problems. She's walking, has to sit down because she feels sweaty, and the left side of her face is funny. So she's got a weird feeling in the left side of her face. Where are we anatomically? Just the left face. Could this be the facial nerve on the left? Yes. You should say yes. That's wrong. Why is that wrong? Because the facial nerve does not carry sensation from the face. It could be that. Could. I warned you, everybody's going to confuse that. It didn't happen. It wasn't happening on the test, you're right. So what brain nerve are we talking about?
Oculomotor.
Not the oculomotor. There's no feeling in oculomotor. Remember? Number five. Trigeminal nerve. General sensory nucleus of five. Tingling feeling. It feels funny. Okay. She has a lazy eye on the left. Lazy eye for most people means that the eye is, really can't tell from history. It usually means the eye is deviated out. It's too lazy to go in. Something wrong with eye motor control on the left-hand side. She's got slurred speech. She's having trouble getting words out. They can't ask her name. She goes, rah, 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 rah. Say, what's your name? Ryder, Mrs. Gunner. You get some response, but you can't make heads nor tails of it. But does she seem to understand you? She's got good comprehension. Why? This is really important. You say, show me two fingers. Yes, sir. How many fingers am I holding up? Barbara. How many is that again? I don't know. So where is the problem? Is it the cortex, the brainstem, the spinal cord? The brainstem. We're talking about brainstem, right? So they could get a brainstem problem. You know that because it's not the cortex, because that's where comprehension is. The cortex at the end of the semester. Weakness, decreased sensation of the left arm, face, and leg. We already knew that sensation was affected, but now weakness is affected. It is involved. What does weakness or strength in the left arm, face, and leg? Is that the spinal cord?
Yes.
No. Why not? Why could it not be the spinal cord? Because the face is affected. The face is up too high. We had a hemiparesis spreading the face last time. This time the face is affected. Any taxa? That's involving the red nucleus, which we don't care about.
Is it cortical?
Well, could this be cortical? I thought we just answered that question a minute ago. Could this be cortical? No. Is that good comprehension? Good comprehension. Unfortunately, so she gets admitted to the hospital, right? But because they were afraid to give her anticoagulant drugs, they recognize she's having a stroke. You should recognize that. Sudden onset. Unfortunately, that night, put in the hospital, but she gets worse. She arrests, they have to intubate her, and she has decervical posturing. We haven't talked about decervical posturing yet, obviously. Decervical posturing is this. Arms locked like this, and her legs locked like this. So you walk in the room, and she's like this, stuck. Before she was showing two fingers, now she's like this. Is that bad? Very bad. Okay. She was intubated and awake, unable to move her extremities, right? Just like this. She cannot move them. But she could answer yes or no questions appropriately by using eye blinks. Is your name Mrs. Smith? Blink once if your name is Mrs. Smith. Blink twice if it's not Mrs. Smith. Your name is Mrs. Smith, and she blinks once. Are you the president of Russia? Blinks twice. What kind of questions? Is your daughter named Kayla? Blinks once. Cortex? Brainstem, spinal cord. Brainstem. One side or both sides?
Both sides.
Both sides. Both sides of the body are affected. So she's got some lesion that's affecting both sides of the spinal cord, of her brainstem. It does not affect her vertebral eye movements. Remember looking up? You know, I'm not going to ask about the Ross interstitial nucleus of Cajal. Remember where I said it was? Where I pointed to? The third nerve on the dorsal or ventral side of the brainstem. So she's got involvement. She's lost. She has maintained her Ross interstitial nucleus of the hall. She can look up. And this is why we don't care about the body, that just the MLF is affected. But she can't move again if you request her to, but she can kind of move the left arm a little bit. Both toes are up going, that we should know. What do up going toes mean? It means that the motor pathways in the brain or spinal cord are affected. On how many sides? Both sides. We already knew that, so that's not a new information. So where is her lesion? Is it the dorsal or ventral brainstem? Ventral brainstem. On both sides. Could this be in the pons?
Yes.
Yes. Could it be in the midbrain?
No.
Only? No. So, could it be in the medulla? Not exclusively. So what's the problem? What does she got? We discussed, you already had this case before. You already done the anatomy once before. Remember the man with the sodium problem? Same condition. She's locked in. She's locked in syndrome. This is the Count of Monte Cristo. This is the bell. The diving bell with a butterfly, same thing. She's locked in because she's had a stroke, a massive stroke of her pons. Some bleeding of her pons, actually, is what she's had.
Is there a treatment?
No, there's no treatment. She would die. Maybe a month, week, days, 6 months, maybe she's like this. It was a really unfortunate thing, right? We're going to save this for Monday, so let me not do that. How about cranial nerve questions? I got the trainer up, guys are ready. We can discuss them. We can see more movies if you want to see movies. Do what? Let me find it again. The cruise ribbon is really easy. That's a good stuff. Some of this is hard, but that's easy. You can see it slide by here somewhere. The very beginning, wouldn't it? My best picture is in the beginning. The descending motor fibers coming from motor cortex. Motor cortex. Descending fiber. Come down. Right through here. They come here and they cross over the decussate. Where they decussate are the pyramids. So the question I could ask is the pyramid connected to the cruciate ribs? The answer is of course. Same structure. Same thing. It's the red stuff here. Comes down through this, the pyramid tract. So this cortical spinal tract, I tried hard not to use the other name for it, called the pyramidal tract. It's the same thing, pyramidal tract, cortical spinal tract. Descending motor fibers. They're easy to recognize because they're so dang big. It's a huge structure, look how big it is. Easy to find. Here's the reverse view, right, of the brainstem, the ventral view, and the cruciate ribs are here. Obscured by the middle cerebral pedoncle. That's how you identify the pons. So if you have a pon, picture the pons, and an arrow points to this thing right here and says, what is this thing? And a pons is not one of the choices, it's the middle cerebral pedoncle. It's how the top part of the brain connects to the contralateral cerebellar hemisphere. But again, we're going to postpone that until we do the cerebellum. But you at least have to be able to attach a name to it. The middle cerebral pedoncle. There's an inferior and a superior cerebellar pedoncle. We'll do that, those pathways when we get there. Other questions? Are the pyramids the dorsal or ventral part?
Ventral.
Ventral most. The most ventral. So if you have a picture of the medulla, lower pines, the ventral most part is a pyramid. What else could it be? Pictures of that? Probably have some. Here we go. The ventral most part is the pyramid. That's easy to recognize here. This is part of the cruciate ribs, coming down from motor cortex.
So is that the pons or the...
How could you tell? Good question. Pons or medulla?
You can see the ventral there. So
it's the medulla. Does it look more like a spinal cord? Remember the spinal cord? It's open the word by now. Or more like the midline. It looks more like the spinal cord. They're the ascending dorsal columns coming up from the spinal cord. This is where they make their first stops. The dorsal columns are coming up the brain. They make their first stop from the lower brain stem, i.e. the medulla. The medulla. Here's the cruciate ribs, but not by name, right? It'll be right here. Coming down from motor cortex, it passes underneath the thalamus. Here's the thalamus, and it comes down through here, it's the cruciate ribs. It comes down to the pyramid, it comes the cortical spinal tract. Other questions? What's the IAF? What are internal arcuate fibers? Where do they connect? Where do they connect?
Dorsal columns
to the blue structure called medial meniscus. So if you have a stroke, your medial meniscus, what function is the patient going to lose? The medial meniscus is wiped out. What are the patient's symptoms? Loss of proprioception, vibration, light touch. Would it be contralateral or ipsilateral? The lesion is the medial meniscus, not the arcuate fibers. The medial meniscus is where you damage. But pick this one. Contralateral sign. Because this is where it crosses over. This is the decussation point, isn't it? Goes from this side to the other side. Interarcuate fibers are the decussating dorsal column fibers.
So, can you go to the next slide? Or the next one? Or... So, it says this is the IAF2.
Huh?
It's like, is that just a general name for the...
It is a general name, yeah.
Cranial nerves?
It's a general name for fibers that cross over. They're interarcuate fibers in the spinal cord.
Is there any way...
The spinal thalamic tract.
Differentiate them?
I'm going to tell you the concept. There's some fiber that crosses over. Both intramarcuate fiber. It's a general description of the kind of fiber. Like spinal cord, brainstem. The cortex has some. How about you? Other questions? The cranial nerves again? Nice. We're launching the cranial nerves. Can you identify, you should be able to identify gaze palsies by pictures. Right? If I took this, wiped it out, okay, you couldn't see this, and asked you what cranial nerve and what side is affected, you should be able to do that. So primary gaze. What is primary gaze? You ask the patient to look straight ahead. Look at me. Stand in front of them and say, look right at my nose. That's what you ask them to do. Primary gaze is primary. If you look to the right, look to the left. It's always the patient's left and the patient's right. Look to your left, look to your right. Cranial number six, right? And there's the answer. But could you figure that out? Remember the facial nerve. It says, told it 10 times, hope it sink in. Is motor to the face. Is there a sensory component of the facial nerve? There is. That's what makes it tricky. I can't say it's just the motor nerve, facial nerve. But there's a very minor, kind of important, minor and important at the same time. Sensory function. What is the sensory function of the facial nerve? That's right. It's taste. So taste is important, but it's not. You're not going to test taste by touching somebody on the face. We seldom test taste in the clinic. We do sometimes. Not turn it off. I made this point. Oh, yes.
Is the facial nerve innervate the jaw?
Yeah. Muscles of mastication. We can skip that. We can go back and touch work. Where's five? What's five? Winter five or somewhere? There it is. From V3, the third, the lower part, lower division, mastication. The pterygoid muscles, the masseter muscles. The lateral pterygoid, the masseter. You do not need to know the names of the muscles of the jaw. But here's pictures of them. The pterygoid muscles, the masseter muscle. The masseter muscle is the big muscle. And how do you test at the clinic? Do the test, right? Very simple test. You can ask them. Bite down really hard, everybody do your job. Bite down hard. Feel that big muscle at the back of the jaw where the hinge is. That's your masseter muscle. You're going to test the pterygoid muscle. You have to ask them to open their mouth. Open your mouth, take your thumb, and head to your fist, and say, open your mouth. And you push it as hard as you can. Look if their jaw deviates to one side. That was a movie we had. Are you still here? Let me find that movie real fast. That would be good. Not you.
Not you.
Where's that movie? Somehow the movie disappeared. Remember the guy who opened his jaw and moved to the side? I did show this movie, right?
Yes.
Made this up? I did show it. He's got atrophy right here. And he And open the jar and move slightly to the right. See that? I just showed one person. I didn't have to show that. You want to see movies? Well, let's just lay it here. Whenever you see somebody's back, right? How many cranial nerves go to the back? Not very many. Like one. Not very many, right? In the clinic, you don't know that someone got a cranial nerve problem. But in our course, it's a good tip off, right? When we talk about the cranial nerves, it's going to be a cranial nerve problem. I'm not going to ask you about lower cervical spinal nerve. So what's the other mouth? What is this lady demonstrating that it's abnormal? She'll be able to see what's abnormal at least. Is it symmetric? In the body, the brain, the nervous system, if it ain't symmetric, it ain't normal, period. And it's failing. Now, you've got to decide which side is abnormal. That's another step number two. But you know that some side must be abnormal. So here, she's asked to hold her arms out, abduct her shoulders. She has to do this. What is it? Where's the abnormality? Volunteer radiologist? Or clinical neurologist? Yeah, volunteer. I'm pretty good at doing that. I've been in practice for years. So what's wrong? Nope, that's the normal side. Should we have some people make up some shirt and demonstrate? All right, call your patients. Compare, look at how, look at the muscle, here's the neck. We have slopes down here. What's this muscle called? Traps, right? These is the local common part, the traps. Compare to this side. Is it sloped down as much? Here's the angle. Is it sloped down like that? Seems to be more curved. Why is it? Is there more muscle or less muscle there? There's less muscle. So the side's got less muscle is abnormal because the nerve innervating has died and the muscle has died. There's another muscle. That's the trapezius muscle. It's got atrophy. Look at this part right here. Compare to this part. So right here. And compare this. Is there a difference? If you look close,
what is
right?
Yeah.
Right. We're coming. Right. That's the easiest part, so we do that last. Everybody see this difference between right here and right here? Does it appear to sort of hollowed out, kind of concave? It should. The suprascapular muscle, a muscle on top of the scapula, has been damaged. It's atrophic too. And then finally, the muscle right here. What, this is a bone, if you were to touch it, a bony thing. Anybody have a bone right there? Bigger bone. What's that bone called?
Scapula.
What's it also called? What's your grandmother called? Your ring bone. Shoulder blade. Wing bone. Remember where you grew up. Scapula glyphic metaphysical. It's winging. It's called winging. Why? Because the muscle is supposed to hold it down when you abduct the shoulder is weak and it lets it fly out. It doesn't hold it down like the tail down here. Called scapular winging. It's not really flying, but you kind of get the idea. So what kind of nerve is it? That's all that discussion. Everybody should look it up by now. Number 11. Can you see it on the slide? This before, she's not, you know, she's at rest, might not getting anything. It's still abnormal. You can still see it here. The picture's not great, but you can kind of see it here, now that you know to look for it. Big muscle. Other questions about, does the tongue make sense? If the tongue deviates to a patient's left, you say, stick out your tongue, they go. What's, they have a cranial nerve problem. Which cranial nerve is going to be? And what side is wrong? The left side. The side with the tongue deviates is abnormal. Why? Because the muscle sticks the tongue out. If one side's sticking harder than the other side,
Which have you seen? Your paddling canoes, or have paddling canoes passed? Up to here. So if you paddle harbor one side, you, what side do you go to? The other side. Same thing. This guy sticks out his tongue. Can you tell, even in a still picture, that the right side is abnormal? Yes. What do we see? Volunteer? What's abnormal? That's right. That's right. So he's got the right hemi atrophy of the tongue. Anybody see the atrophy? I know the picture here in the back. You don't know, kind of on your own. All right. What should we do? Facial nerve, what side is that normal?
Right.
And been instructed to close your eyes as tight as you can. I said, command. So the right side is weak. How do you notice the facial nerve and not, say, the cortex? It's the whole face, the whole hemi face. It's this guy, not this guy. When we do the cortex, we're going to see this guy. So what's the difference? It is the forehead. If the forehead is normal, it cannot be a facial nerve problem. It cannot be a brainstem problem. It cannot be. If the forehead is spared. It has to come from the cortex, almost exclusively. It could be the thalamus, that's really rare. But something above the brainstem. Double vision. Side by side, horizontal. Could this be a sixth nerve palsy? Could this be a third nerve palsy? Yes to both. Yes to both. Things are side by side, meaning eyes do not look together. They are malaligned. They are unyoked. They are disconjugate. All same thing, right? They don't look the same place at the same time. So one eye could be looking in. In this case, we have right medial rectus weakness. Okay, does that make sense? Double vision. What if we had right lateral rectus weakness? I think I might have said the tip wrong right there. That's what I said. If the medial rectus is weak on the right, the lateral rectus is going to win. Kind of pull it this way. You have double vision. If the medial rectus is weak in the right eye, the lateral rectus is weak, it's going to go this way. So there are four different conditions that can produce this. Left or right, medial or lateral rectus weakness. So all you've done, you narrowed down to four possibilities. Could it be a fourth cranial nerve problem? No. It could not be. Remember this child. He's got his head, the head tilt is a volunteer. His head is not stuck, he just likes it that way. He likes it that way. Why? He has weakness of intorsion of one of his eyes. Weakness of intorsion of one of his eyes caused by weakness of the superior oblique muscle caused by dysfunction of the trochlear nerve. Does that make any sense? Probably not. Everybody assumes that it's this eye that's abnormal. It just kind of looks like it would be abnormal. No real reason for it, but if you ask the population, you did a poll of non-nerve anatomists like y'all, I bet 90% say this side is abnormal. That's the side that the head is tilted. That's the wrong side. How does tilting your head to one side help you? Why is the child doing it voluntarily? So his grandmother, his mother, both, his sister, everybody, his aunt, son, sit up straight. Hold your head up straight. Right? If he didn't do it voluntarily, they have to do it for him. Hold your head straight. What is the experience when you make him do that? Double vision. Double vision. Are things side by side?
Yes.
Or tilted? Tilted would be one on top of each other, right? Is it
Does he see the world? Instead of having one hand, does he two hands like this, or two hands like that? This one. The weakness of distortion. If you're bad at our eyesight, if you can't remember the anatomy, which you might rather do, there's the mic. But in a test, anything's fair, right? Does this man have oculomotor nerve lesion? He's looking to his left, so the command is look left. This eye works fine. Is the left lateral rectus normal? Left lateral rectus normal. Yes. Is the right lateral rectus normal? You have no idea. If you'd ask me to be right. Is the right medial rectus normal? No. Cannot be. It cannot be normal. Why does his lid hang that down? Why are his pupils, can't see this even up here, why are the pupils asymmetric? Why is one bigger than the other? And which one is bigger? That's a harder question. But why are they different in the first place? Is it just the oculomotor nerve? The answer is no. It has to be Edinger Westphal nucleus, or it's fine. What does Edinger Westphal nucleus do? Autonomic to the eye. What are the autonomic functions of the eye? Control the pupil. Also to control the lid. Pupil is the most useful thing.
So Edinger Westphal, that controls the eyelid?
Yep. Really, the third one controls that. The Edinger Westphal has a little bit. There's two things, two muscles to do that. That's why people can have. So to make it a clear statement, there are two muscles that pull the eyelid up. The major one, the one that's the strongest, is oculomotor nerve muscle. So we'll just go with that. The pupil is going to be the most useful thing clinically to tell whether or not the Edinger Westphal nucleus is affected. If this eye is bigger, the pupil is bigger, the affected eye, is that consistent with Edinger Westphal, or is that something else? And the rest of all is parasympathetic or sympathetic? Parasympathetic. When you stimulate the sympathetic system, they're going to make the eyes bigger. When you're being chased by a bear, in the dark, you don't hear the eyes get more light. Yes. Sympathetic activation makes people bigger. That's activation, the sympathetic system. But if you wipe out parasympathetic activation, which makes the people small, you're going to have to say, big people. See, that's the tricky part, right? That's really hard. It's activation or inactivation, upregulation, downregulation, parasympathetic or sympathetic. It's a 2 or 3 step process to figure out everything is simple. That's why we're going over this process over and over again. How much said about olfactory nerve? That's pretty simple. Almost time to quit. Other questions?
Is the torsion of the eye considered a
On that last one, you said it could be one of two things.
All right, any other questions?
Why is he told his hand? It's like, why? He said it's like, told him to put hand, not like,
take this muscle and turn it. The guy that turned it. It also has a picture of that. It has a little bit of a difference. Of course, it also doesn't work.
So what does Harrison do?
Here's the brainstem. The red fiber is the oxygen motor nucleus. That's the third thing on our nucleus. That just moves the eyeball around. It is not the parasympathetic system. But right next to it, is the blue part, the Edinger-Westphal nucleus. They come out of the brainstem, and they travel together in the oculomotor nerve. The nerve is this part here. The nucleus is the part here.
The Edinger-Westphal controls, you said, sympathetic.
Supply to the
parasympathetic. Yeah. You lose the parasympathetic function, the people will die.
Does anything do sympathetic?
Yeah. It does. And we may have talked about the process. It's really complicated. So, it goes back, leaves, and white cells, back to your neck, back in the brain. Kind of called Horner syndrome. Maybe we'll do Horner syndrome on Monday. Okay, we're done. Unless you want to hang out and ask questions. Where's the uvula? Anybody heard of the uvula? Everybody should know that one. There it was. We just saw it. Okay. See you on Monday. Enjoy the rain.
Excuse me, I have a question about this. About, you know how the brainstem and the medulla and everything, like, oh, the same thing, whatever. They, how can you tell whether the injury will be caused or not?